Hope everybody had a good weekend. Coming up, we have Donatas, your bonus from Basket News. We're talking about Eurobasket today. Still a lot of NBA players participating in that, and the games have been a lot of fun. So we're catching up on Eurobasket with Donatas, your bonus. That's coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Let's talk about some Eurobasket today with Donatas, your bonus from Basket News. Donatas, how are you doing today, man?
Hey, man. It's a pleasure to be on your show. It's a pleasure to hear that somebody from US is also excited about the Eurobasket as we are. So it's been a crazy tournament so far. So I think the timing is perfect for your show right now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's been a fun tournament. Two big upsets over the weekend. A lot of NBA players still alive as well in the tournament. Some not. Jokic got eliminated. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I want to start out with what is probably going to be the marquee game of the round of eight coming up, and that's Germany against Slovenia. Germany, they blow out Portugal. No big surprise there. They're the favorites remaining in the tournament, and they're facing off against Slovenia after Luka Doncic had 42 points. Against Italy, including 30 points in the first half. He just destroyed switches in the first half, ISO'd over and over, got wherever he wanted. But Germany's got a lot more long-armed NBA caliber defenders, Franz Wagner being, you know, the biggest name on that team. So Donatas, I'm wondering, do you feel like Luka one-man show is enough to have a chance of leading Slovenia to a win over Germany?
Kevin, to be honest, I really don't know how they can compete with the German team. I mean, they're just full perfect package for FIBA basketball. They play together for a few years. They have clear hierarchies in their top players. Although you can consider Franz Wagner as the biggest German NBA star. Actually, it starts from Dennis Schroeder. And they have these two NBA superstars. Daniel Theis is a perfect center in FIBA basketball, being a mobile center that you cannot beat on the switch, that can stretch the floor. And he was utilizing this position really well. They have so many great role players that are not playing at the very, very top level in Europe. They're not even playing, you know, go-to roles in their teams, but they fit together so well that it feels like this team is perfectly built for FIBA basketball. And then you look at the numbers. Offensively, they were the first in offensive ratings. They were basically leading all the categories in stats. Defensively, apparently, they're also the best team in defense so far. And they were beating their opponents by a 32-point margin in the group stage, which is the largest margin since 1977. Or something like that. So for Luka, I mean, it's been already incredible for them to achieve the quarterfinals with the supporting cast that he has. It's already unbelievable result. But to beat Germany, that would be one of the craziest results if that happened.
Yeah, it would be nuts. I mean, look, he drops 42 against Italy. Italy does not have anywhere as close as the defensive personnel that Germany does, right? Like you mentioned, Dennis Schroeder, you know, kind of the head of the snake is their point guard. Franz Wagner, very versatile player as well. But then guys like, you know, Tristan Da Silva from the Orlando Magic, who's having a really good tournament for Germany. And, you know, Isaac Bonga, not a big NBA name, but long arm. You at least have guys that it feels like you can throw at Luka. And in Italy in the second half of that game, they threw two at him more often. It changed up their strategy a little bit, obviously far, far too late for it to actually matter after that just dominant first half fight by him. But you're right. Like Germany is just the deeper team. I mean, we see like certain teams in this tournament, like sometimes just an off shooting night. France shoots 3 of 36 against Georgia. Like if they have a horrible shooting night, maybe you have a chance, but it would be something miraculous. It really would be. If Luka is able to lead Slovenia past Germany into the Final Four. So it seems like you don't like their chances. I don't either. It would take something miraculous from Luka. It really would.
But at the same time, I mean, Luka's magic is a thing, right?
He is.
It would first time surprises all of us. And for instance, Germany in the round of 16 game against Portugal, although it ended up as a blowout win, they were ahead only by 1 point after three quarters. The reason for that was 22 missed three-pointers in a row. So it brought us back to these Houston Rockets times when they missed 27. So, I mean, if they miss 23 pointers in a row and Luka is doing Luka's things, you never know. It might be a close game. And this FIBA tournament, EuroBasket 2025, kind of proved that the concept of favorites does not exist anymore. It just doesn't. With Serbia out, with France out, with the two teams that we saw in the top four in the power rankings before a tournament, those big names with a lot of great players, they're out of the competition. They're not even among the top eight teams. So, I mean, I predicted before the quarterfinals that it should be a blowout win for Germany because they're just too good. But again, it's Luka, and you never know with Luka.
Yep, you never know with Luka. And ultimately, though, like you said, it has been a tournament where favorites just don't matter, right? Like Germany is the favorite right now, but Serbia arguably was prior to that, before Nikola Jokic and the Serbians lost to Finland this week. They lost 92-86 in a very close game against Finland. They were without Bogdan Bogdanovic, who has a torn hamstring, but I'm not so sure that would have made the biggest difference in that game. Finland played a really high level game, great energy throughout the game, shot well. And then at the end of the game, really the whole fourth quarter, I felt like they just had the perfect strategy of just target Jokic over and over and over and over. They brought him out to the perimeter. And the difference for Jokic between like teams doing that in the NBA versus teams doing that against Serbia is that in the NBA, he has Aaron Gordon behind him protecting the rim. He has size behind him helping us as defensive players. For Serbia, I just don't think they had enough personnel to support Jokic on defense. But ultimately, it was the right strategy for Finland, just exposing him on the perimeter. Like that's always what teams are going to try to do against him.
Yeah, that's true. First of all, I'm offended that you're using EuroHoops Instagram and social media on this one instead of Basket News. Okay, I'm joking. But the thing is that, yeah,
I'll tell my producers to delete all those ones out of here. Get them out. Basket News only.
Yeah, it was a weird game, and you could actually predict that that's what Finland is going to do because they're bigs. All the bigs that they can shoot threes. And in a game against Turkey, you could feel that Jokic's presence on the court defensively might be a problem. Alperen Şengün was killing him. And Jokic didn't even try to contest his three-pointers. And I think that Alperen hit his career-high three-pointers in that game, and he was crucial. So Finland with Lauri Markkanen, with Mikael Jantunen, eventually with this 18-year-old kid, Mika Murinen, shooting those threes in front of his face, they just killed Serbia and Jokic. And I mean, there are a lot of different opinions here in Europe right now that, yeah, Jokic was targeted. He didn't have great teammates around to kind of try to hide him in those defensive coverages. But at the same time, some other teams proved that it's doable. And some missed more impact of the head coach, Svetislav Pešić, who didn't actually adjust to Finland's game plan. Of course, you could say that Finland was also lucky a little bit because some role players that you didn't expect them to display this crazy performance, they hit some important big shots. Again, this Mika Murinen, 18-year-old NBA prospect, he didn't hit a single three-pointer before that game against Serbia. He was 0 from 4. In the fourth quarter, in basically 60 seconds, he gets Nikola Jokic in front of him, and he just shoot those threes. He made those 2 3-pointers, which were crucial. So it's been like some luck from Finland side, some, let's say, uncomfortable matchups compared Serbia and Finland, and at the same time, a full package of problems that Serbia had, because I kind of called Germany as a clear favorite because so far in the tournament, they looked as favorites. Serbia was more of a favorite on paper. Throughout the whole group stage, they were dealing with a lot of issues. You mentioned Bogi Bogdanovic. He was out for the competition in his second game. Vasile Micic, he was supposed to be an important player for the team. But the problem was that I think that he played only one exhibition game before a tournament because of the injury. The last top-level competitive game he had was in February in the NBA, and it looked like he tried to get into his shape throughout the group stage, but he never picked up his game rhythm. You probably remember Aleksa Vramovic, crazy Serbian guard who was, you know, who's like a dog, who's chasing those steals from Shea Gilgeous Alexander, from Steph Curry, who was giving energy in the last year's Paris Olympics. He got injured during the tournament. And the whole Serbian team was built around Nikola Jokic and Bogdan Bogdanovic. And Bogi Bogdanovic, I don't know if U.S. people understand how important he is for Serbian national team. He's their true leader on and off the floor. And also the whole game was around Jokic and Bogdanovic, because Coach Pešić, he didn't bring the best available players of Serbia. He picked the best players who would fit around those two. And then you miss one, then you have all these problems with the other creators. Now you're facing some problems. So I think it was just a full package of issues and some crazy night for Finland, hitting those threes and getting huge impact from the role players.
I mean, I think you said it, like, without Bogdanovic, you really needed Micić to be the guy that we saw in Europe for over a decade, the MVP, the champion. Like, but he was not quite that yet. And for him, I'm very glad he went to the NBA just to give it a shot. It hasn't gone great for him, but like as you said, he hasn't played high level basketball for basically this entire year. And even prior to that, he wasn't getting a lot of minutes. So there's probably an element of rust and returning from the injury as well. And they needed him, and he was unable to fill the shoes of Bogdan Bogdanovic, unfortunately. And as you said, a little bit of luck on Finland's side. Like that's the beauty of single elimination tournaments. Sometimes you just have one great game, like these outlier performances, and boom, here you go, you're advancing. And you mentioned Mika Morinen, their 18-year-old player who's a potential top pick in the 2027 NBA draft. Give me a scouting report of Morinen for people who are like, who is this guy? I have no idea anything about Mika Morinen.
Man, I think he's the player with the most swag in this Eurobasket. Again, you're 0-4 in the whole tournament. You're facing Serbia, which was ranked number one team in the Eurobasket. You're playing against Jokic. You're shooting those threes without no hesitation. You know,
so
other coach could start yelling at you, you know, what the hell are you doing? But he's there in the fourth quarter. He's playing and he's hitting those crucial shots. He's also trash talking a lot. I can guarantee that he was getting messages from the Serbian fans after that game, because he was getting in those trash talk fights with some Serbian players. I would say he's a cocky player. No, on the court, he's acting like a superstar, but that kind of fits his game so far. And that's why he was, I would say, successful, because he was giving spark to his team. I mean, his athletic abilities are crazy. He's 2 meters, 10 centimeters tall, which is 6'11 feet or something.
Yeah, 6'10, 6'11, yep.
There were a lot of put back dunks. He dunked the ball in transition. You probably all saw those pictures. Him dunking the ball, his length, his size is incredible. Apparently, he can make those important three-pointers. He can play with the ball. Defensively, he can contribute as a great defender coming from the help. So, I mean, he's a very interesting prospect. And, I mean, he's just entering the 12th grade in the high school. So I guess his classmates, he's going to receive a lot of questions from his classmates about his summer.
I mean, a fun summer for him, and we'll see how it goes against Georgia this week. That's who they're going to face off after Georgia upset France over the weekend. France shot only 6 of 36 from three. Bilal Coulibaly, Wizards second-year player entering his third year in the NBA, very disappointing game and tournament for him. 0 of 3, 0 points in their elimination game in 6 games in Eurobasket. Averaged 6.3 points a game, 4.3 rebounds, 0.5 assists. Shot only 40%, 41% from the field, only 21% from three. And I don't want to rag on Coulibaly as young as he is, but like France, when you have Wemby and Gobert and like a lot of these established NBA players not playing for you, they needed some of these younger guys to step up, and they just didn't get that in this entire tournament. And I'd say, you know, I think this is true for the Olympic team, but also true for the team we saw this year in Eurobasket. I think aside from the fact they were missing some of their established NBA players, I feel like France as a country is they're missing a point guard. Like, they've had too many guys that have been high-ranked prospects, who I know this, that have not panned out. You know, Killian Hayes, Maladon. Like, they just have a lot of point guards over the years. Eli Okobo, that are okay international players even, but they have not been able to translate to the NBA or become guys that can lead the national team. Do you agree with that? Like, the number one hole in the roster for France is the fact they don't have that point guard?
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's been the case for years for them. And I remember that Evan Fournier, at some point, he became the main and sole ball handler for that team. And offensively, they were struggling a lot throughout those competitions. But with their experience, with their defense, with their size, they still managed to reach those podium and get those medals. Now, without all these guys, with their experience, with their chemistry, there were a lot of young players, right? The new head coach, a lot of players who made their national team debuts, and a lot of guys who cannot actually make a three-pointer. And as I mentioned, a lack of a point guard who could be a true floor general on the court. And the one who was supposed to be that guy, Matthew Strzel, he was also NBA draft prospect. He is now playing in the EuroLeague. And throughout the exhibition games, he was the one who was, I would say, moving the ball the best. He was the one with more experience from the EuroLeague basketball, from FIBA basketball already. And I thought that he could be the guy to run the show for them, to help the guys to use their strengths. But he got injured on the eve of the EuroBasket, and they were clearly missing some consistency in that position. A lot of different guys tried to play that role, but they never had this clear leader who could guide the team. And yeah, a lot of comes on their youth, inexperience, inconsistent three-point shooting. And although defensively, they were there, they were intense, they played together. Alexar, by the way, got injured in the beginning of the competition. Yep. He was huge for the team, by the way, especially in that win against Slovenia. I mean, they just faced the wall that we kind of got used to see the French team facing in 2000s, let's say, when everyone was playing zone defense, letting them shoot threes and surviving that way. So, yeah, I mean, again, by their name and status, they were favorites. They were among the top teams in the competition. But the way they played, they didn't look like favorites entering the knockout stage. So, although I didn't expect them to lose, but, you know, I'm not that surprised at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I don't think it's overly surprising either. It is an upset for sure. But with so many missing pieces and so many flaws on the roster, look, I think for the French national team moving forward, it is so critical that this incoming rookie for the Brooklyn Nets, Nolan Traoré, ends up being a good player. But I think France needs Traoré to be that speedster, that energizer, that lead point guard on their rosters moving forward. And we'll see. Like, there's no guarantees with him. He has similar flaws as a lot of these past point guards. Can he shoot? Can he not shoot? Like, and that seems to be the running trend with a lot of French players, is can they actually shoot? And they're missing their best shooter, Victor Wembanyama. I thought it was funny after the game, Mamu, who former teammate of Wemby, said, "I can text him now that it's too bad he wasn't here because we would have beat France anyway." It's a great quote. Talking trash to Wemby. Yeah.
Mamu was flying. So now he has all the confidence, and he is rightful to say those words. Although they were advancing, but you cannot blame them. They won the game.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. Yeah, they won that game and they're advancing. And I think, you know, one of the topics you guys have talked about on Basket News and has been discussed, you know, around the tournament is the naturalized players. Kamar Baldwin played a pivotal part for Georgia in that game. And he's not from the country of Georgia. He's from the state of Georgia and the United States, Winder, Georgia, not Georgia, the country. Shane Larkin for Turkey, Jordan Lloyd for Poland. So it's like a lot of naturalized players, a maximum of one per team. But what's your take on this? It seems like FIBA is not moving away from it. So it's here to stay, but What do you think, Donatas?
You would better not ask me because I'm coming from a country which never naturalized a player.
No.
So we're together with Serbians. They also have the same feeling about it. I mean, I don't like it. The whole idea was to help some players to get naturalized for their team if they have some roots of that national team. For instance, Greece has Tyler Dorsey. I don't remember the exact family tree, but, you know, his family members has Greek roots. And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with players spending many, many years in that country and then kind of earning the status of a local player and representing the national team. That's fine. But, you know, when some teams just bring a player to the national team, I mean, it sounds like a free agency. And it doesn't make sense because I think that those players should represent the national product of their basketball. If they're missing some position, let's say Lithuania was missing point guard star player for years, that means we're doing something wrong in our basketball system. So let's work on that. Let's improve that area. And it's our issue and we're going to solve that. I mean, getting a player from the United States to fill that void, it's, of course, it's smart if you want to win something in those FIBA tournaments. But for the growth of basketball, especially in these countries, I'm not sure. Because there are many cases with these naturalized players, many of them are guards, where you could see that, you know, after they left, the problem wasn't solved. So they just bring another American player. So again, I'm happy for these guys. For instance, Jordan Lloyd is doing an amazing job. He's that guy, if you remember, random guy in a suit when Toronto win the NBA title and when Kawhi hit that shot. He's a great guy. He's hooping so well that now highest scoring numbers for any naturalized player ever in the Eurobasket history. And I mean, it's cool to see guys hooping, but to me, I mean, it doesn't make much sense, to be honest with you. And FIBA thought that those small countries would benefit and would be more competitive against the FIBA powerhouses if they get some additional help. But when you see Turkey, when you see Spain naturalizing players, Slovenia won the Eurobasket with naturalized player, it's too much to me. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm with you on it. I think ultimately it just feels like free agency, as you said. I think it's kind of silly, to be honest with you, how it can happen just so quickly. It's one thing if a player spends multiple years there and they earn the citizenship, but some of these guys, it's like they land in the country and that's when they suddenly become a citizen. It's clear. It's just purely for basketball. And I don't know. I just find that silly. And now, like Jordan Lloyd, you mentioned him with the suit story. The way I remember Jordan Lloyd is, I remember chasing him down at the Raptors bus during the finals because I was trying to get an interview with him because I had heard he was the guy who was in the Raptors practice squad acting as Stephen Curry. He was the guy that was like running around screens, going crazy and trying to be their Steph. So the Toronto could prepare, and they did an excellent job defending Stephen Curry in that series. Of course, a lot of Warriors injuries, but Jordan Lloyd played a pivotal part off the floor for that Raptors team win the NBA Finals. And so that's how I remember Jordan Lloyd. And now he's in his 30s playing international basketball for Poland. It's just so funny. It just feels very silly. And I mean, you'll see Shane Larkin, who has spent a lot of years playing internationally, playing for Turkey in their game this week against Poland. They had a competitive game. As one of the favorites in this tournament, 2:30 left in the game, Turkey is tied against Sweden. Did you see anything in that game that makes you feel that Poland has actual upset potential against Turkey this week?
I mean, eight finals were weird. It's hard to make any conclusions because there were a lot of strange games. Watching them throughout the group stage, you could say that their depth might be a problem. Guys like Şengün, Cedi Osman, Shane Larkin, many others played big minutes because that's the, let's say, strategy of their head coach, Ergin Ataman, who plays short rotations, and he believes that he doesn't need that much help of the bench players. So going forward, that could be an issue. But I think matchup-wise, although Poland is not a very comfortable opponent. They're physical. They have great size. They have Jordan Lloyd now, playing like crazy, scoring 23 points per game. Mateusz Ponitka, I mean, FIBA Mateusz Ponitka is also a different guy, getting those triple doubles. If you remember in 2022, he eliminated Slovenian quarterfinalists by getting a triple double in one of the biggest upsets in the Eurobasket history as well. So, I don't know. I mean, everything is possible, but I would put Turkey in this small group of teams that I would call clear favorites. Just like Germany, they displayed really solid basketball. I mean, the way Alperen Şengün is playing, the way others are contributing with Shane Larkin, with J.D. Osman, even some role players like Sekmuş Hazer, Kevin Sipahi. I mean, that's a very solid team on both ends of the floor. And I didn't expect them to click so fast and to be that solid. But I wouldn't be surprised if Turkey goes all the way and they meet Germany in the finals. To me, these two teams looked as the most strongest teams. And from Poland's side, I think they already reached their ceiling. So I don't see many hopes for them to beat Turkey.
Yeah, I don't either, to be honest. I mean, Turkey's deep, man, and Şengün is playing at an extremely high level as well, playing big minutes, as you said. It's basically playing NBA-level minutes. He's playing 34, 35 minutes in these must-win games. And ultimately, I think with him, if you're a Rockets fan watching these games right now, I'm feeling a bit optimistic about the frequency of him shooting three-pointers. He's taking two or three per game right now for Turkey, and the comfortability in making those shots as well, or taking those shots as well. I think Şengün just looks like a guy who's going to come back this NBA season as an even better player overall. And of course, like, we're dealing with small samples in this tournament, and obviously it's not NBA-level competition either, but it is high-level competition. It's very high-level competition. It's very physical competition. And Şengün just looks like a better player to me right now than he did at the end of the season for Houston. He looks like a guy that recognized his all-star caliber talent, his all-NBA potential, as a guy who was like, okay, I can taste it. I know what the success feels like, and he's going to come back an even better player. And so I think this dude is one of the best players in the tournament, obviously. And now with the Rockets, you know, adding Kevin Durant, hopefully their young guys, Reed Shepard, Amen Thompson, and so on and so forth, Jabari Smith, continue improving. Şengün might be ready to take a leap here. That's what it looks like to me watching him for Turkey right now.
I agree. I mean, against Serbia, he outplayed Nikola Jokic, and it was a big factor behind that game. And it was not a coincidental matchup that he won. He was fearless. I mean, he was attacking Nikola Jokic. He was trying hard defensively. He put a lot of effort. He was super physical. His basketball decision making is incredible as well. That helps to move the ball in Turkey's team. And the pieces that they have on the team just makes a really, really solid team. So, and thanks to Alperen Şengün, I mean, he was already displaying big numbers in the last Eurobasket competition for Turkey. But this year, he's on a different level. And if Turkey goes all the way, he's one of the top three candidates to win the MVP award for sure.
The only game remaining that we have not mentioned is Greece versus Lithuania, the team you're rooting for, of course. You're from Lithuania. Tell me this. Jonas Valanciunas has been coming off the bench, hasn't played a lot of minutes. Is this the game he's going to have to play a bigger role, or what's going to actually have to be the key to somehow try to contain Giannis?
His role is different this year, but it's also affected by the matchups. For instance, Lithuania did an amazing job stopping Lauri Markkanen with Jonas Valančiūnas on the bench, because he's a target on the court when there's Lauri Markkanen when enter on the floor on Finland's roster. So just because, you know, from the coaching standpoint, they decided to put him off the bench, and it worked well. They basically did the same against Latvia that Kristaps Porzingis. And since Lithuania national team is trying to build their game based on defense, that's the, I would say, uncomfortable decision, but something that they had to do. But against Greece, they have less bigs who can stretch the floor. And their front line is not that physical. They're not that tough. So Jonas Valančiūnas might be really beneficial on both ends of the floor. He might be even used to trying to stop Giannis or to be one of these centerpieces of Giannis' wall that Lithuania is going to build. And on the other side of the floor, he might try to get Giannis into foul trouble. He might get to try to put another Greek bigs in a foul trouble because they were facing some issues playing Bosnia, actually, with Yusuf Nurkic just basically playing bully ball inside the paint. So I think that after these couple of nights where Valančiūnas was in less smaller role, now it might be a time for Jonas Valančiūnas to step up and play a very important role trying to help Lithuania to advance past Greece.
And I think Greece as well, they have some issues with perimeter ball handling as well. And you guys have the Lithuanian Alex Caruso. So you get a shot. Tell me about the Lithuanian Alex Caruso, Donatas.
I mean, that's crazy. The guy was barely made the final 12-man roster because he was fighting. He was trying to earn the second backup point guard position, and the coach had the point guard who he liked from the previous teams, and his idea was to put him on the team. In the very last game of the preparation stage, this guy, Arnas Velička, Lithuanian Alex Caruso, earned that spot, so he made the team. But still, he was only a backup to Rokas Jokubaitis, the New York Knicks draftee who was having an amazing tournament. Rokas Jokubaitis goes down, and in the very next game against Sweden, the head coach picks another guy who is actually playing more as a shooting guard to be the main point guard in that game. The guy goes down as well in two or three minutes into the game, so he's forced to put this guy, Arnas Velička, on the floor. He plays a really solid game, and against Latvia, he's basically a sole point guard on the team, so he's starting the game. He hits some threes. He's having some great defensive possessions and just dominating the game. And then Latvia's point guard, in an accidental hit, he basically bites some of his head. He goes to the locker room. He puts a band, and now we have Alex Caruso on the Lithuanian team, who was having a great team game. So, I mean, that's another, let's say, Lithuania's position in the quarterfinals. I would say it's a Cinderella story because they weren't seen among the favorites in this Eurobasket. They had their main point guard getting injured. And in Lithuania, our expectations were quite low. But these guys that were coming from nowhere, like Caruso, I mean, they helped this team to go forward, and with some smart coaching staff decisions, with some players stepping up in their first national team appearance. Now we have a situation where we're kind of excited about this game against Greece. We're excited that we might build a wall against Giannis and we might have a chance to go to the semifinals, something we never dreamed of before the competition.
So you feel like Lithuania has a shot against Greece because of some of those flaws on Greece's roster? You kind of...
I'm from Lithuania, but I mean, Greece is not a perfect team. Giannis is having a great... I mean, he's unstoppable. We saw two different defensive approaches. Spain tried to double and triple team him defensively. He was passing the ball so well that this year, what's different from the last year, now he has guards who can make three-pointers. And they way better shooters than he had in Paris Olympics. So he was passing the ball so well, and his teammates were hitting those shots that Spain couldn't do nothing. In the previous game against Israel, they decided to try to contain him one-on-one. And there's nobody in this Eurobasket who could stop him one-on-one. So that's why he scored 37 points in 20 minutes on... zero made three-pointers, and I think only two free throw attempts. That's a crazy stat line. I mean, that's historical, probably. So there's no way to stop Giannis. I think it's more about trying to isolate others from the game and not to make them feel that it's their night. So they have some depth issues. As I mentioned, their backcourt is not perfect. They're not very consistent. They have some mismatches that Lithuania can exploit. So who knows? I see Greece as high favorites, but again, this EuroBasket proved that everything is possible, and Lithuania has some weapons to provide to make it a very interesting night.
We'll be back right after this break. You mentioned that game he had against Spain. He had 9 assists in that game. Greece shot 12 of 25 from three. And Giannis himself still had 25 points in the game. So you're going to send multiple bodies at him, but he can still score. So I think ultimately I agree with your assessment of like kind of let Giannis get his and just protect against everything else. Might have to be the way you go about it. But at the same time, there's no easy answers. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see a mixture of both of the strategies in the game to always keep him thinking, throwing different things at him possession by possession. And that's hard to do, though, as a defense. Like, it makes me just think about what OKC did against Denver and Jokic in the second round of the playoffs this year in the NBA, where like one game they have Caruso defending Jokic, one game they're doubling, one game they're playing single coverage. Like, it was always something different strategically against Jokic. I think that's what sometimes you have to do against these, the elite of the elite great players, is you have to make them think. And that's a hard thing to do. But I think that's what you're going to have to see Lithuania do against Greece. With that said, though, Lithuania did beat Latvia. I'm curious about your impressions of Kristaps Porzingis in this tournament, because it was a weird season for him in the NBA, dealing with some sickness that still has yet to be actually identified with what it was exactly. But he looked a lot better. He looked very good. What were your impressions of Porzingis and EuroBasket?
He was not very consistent. If I remember well, he missed first 14 three-pointers in the first three games. He couldn't connect those shots. The problem is that Latvia that is not a defensive-minded team. And offensively, they rely too much on three-point shooting. You have Porzingis, you have Bertens, who played in NBA. All the other guards, they're also about shooting the ball, but not much about being disciplined or trying to win the games through grit and grind or something like that. And as soon as shots are not falling in, or as Lithuania or some other teams managed to kind of contain them and force them to shoot tough shots, they didn't have much to offer, actually. And that was the problem. Although KP was amazing in the last game, but it was more about the others, because they also had some injury problems. Some important players who played were playing through pain, through injuries. And although many saw Latvia before the EuroBasket as one of the dark horses of the competition based on their previous World Cup experience in 2023, they just never looked as a solid winning team, neither in the preparation stage nor in the EuroBasket. So I had big hopes for Lithuania to win that one. And again, strategically, they managed to stop them, although Porzingis had a good night.
Yeah, you're right. He did have a good night. Inconsistent still. I just look forward to seeing how it translates to Atlanta this year, because, boy, it was still like just so weird. So weird. What had happened with him with Boston this year is the inconsistency was a big part of it, as you said, where he had like weeks where he looked okay and then weeks where he looked like he was just totally dead. And I just wonder if that's going to change at all. But I think he looked a lot better. He looks a lot better compared to that low bar of what he was before. So we'll see there within the NBA. So this week we have Lithuania against Greece, Turkey against Poland. We have Germany against Slovenia, and then Finland against Georgia. Of this final eight, who do you think is going to win it all?
I mean, I think Germany is just too good. They're from another level. Turkey is dangerous. I would predict them meeting Germany in the finals, but I don't know. I just love watching Germany. Although I'm from Lithuania, I support Lithuania, but I just feel so much joy watching them play together, being perfect on both ends. They're playing basically NBA style of basketball, just really efficient basketball. A lot of great characters on that team, not necessarily the biggest talents, the greatest players, but together they fit so well, and they're just a pattern to follow for anybody in international basketball. So my pick would be Germany, but I'm really intrigued to hear your picks. What would be your prediction for the medals, gold, silver, and bronze?
I do think Germany is probably the safe pick to win it all, but at the same time, like I really like Turkey as well. Şengün playing at such a high level right now. But I think Germany, they just have more depth. They do feel like the more connected team as well, their chemistry, the way they play. So I think Germany gold is the safe bet. On the other side of the bracket, who would be silver? I'll say Turkey, though I am part Polish. I'm a quarter Polish, so I have some ties to Poland as well, but I'll say Turkey. And then for bronze, let's give it a Finland. They're playing well. We'll give it a Finland. But I don't feel totally confident in that choice with Finland as bronze in this tournament. But I do think they should beat Georgia. They should beat Georgia, which is why I think they'll probably be in the third place game. Whereas with Lithuania, Greece, and then Turkey, Poland, I think it's a bit harder to say who's going to advance with some of those matchups. What do you think for silver and bronze, since you also agree with Germany as gold?
Yeah, so Germany, and pick Germany for gold, Turkey for silver.
Lithuania. Give me Lithuania, Donatas.
Okay, let's go Lithuania. Let's go with Lithuania. If not Lithuania, then it's Greece, probably, but we go with Lithuania tonight.
Yeah, I hope we get Lithuania versus Poland. That's what I hope we get. A battle.
Why not? I can guarantee that somebody will surprise us. I mean, that was the trend of this Eurobasket, so nothing is clear. Nothing is predictable.
I think the most legacy-defining thing that could happen is if Luka somehow leads Slovenia to gold.
Even just getting a medal in the tournament would be crazy, because, I mean, I do not want to make it sound disrespectful to the supporting cast that he has, because these guys are great guys. They're fighters. They're doing their best. They're adjusting to Luka. They're adjusting to their limitations. And so far, they're doing an incredible job. And even when Luka is out, everyone expects their lead to decrease. Everyone expects a collapse of their game, but it's not the thing. Somehow, they managed to contain the lead that they managed to build with Luka. But, I mean, they lost one of the best centers in the EuroLeague, naturalized center Josh Nebo before tournaments. Vlatko Chanchar, also, he had some issues with his new club in Italy. He didn't join the team. And all the other guys who were consistent helpers for Luka in the previous competitions, they're far from their peak years. They're declining a little bit. They're getting older. The new guys, the new generation is not showing up. So this is probably the least talented Slovenian national team that Luka Doncic has around him. So that would be just an insane achievement. That would put Luka to another level, because he's already doing the most among those NBA superstars. Giannis, Şengün, Jokic. They have way more talent around them than Luka Doncic.
Donatas, please tell people where they can all find your stuff.
Oof, basketnews.com website for all the news, for all the updates from the Eurobaskets. Also, we have a great social media team, so make sure to follow Basket News Instagram profile. And we have a very cool YouTube channel, Basket News, as well, where basically we're recording podcasts after every bigger game or event in the Eurobasket.
Donatas, thank you so much for joining me today, man. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks for catching up with the Eurobasket.
Big thank you to Donatas Yerbonis for joining me on today's show talking Eurobasket. Be sure to check out his stuff, Basket News. As he said, they're doing reaction podcasts after every single game. So if you're interested in these games from a competition standpoint or even just the NBA standpoint, they're a lot of fun. I'll be talking more Eurobasket later this week as well. Once the round of eight is wrapped up and we're moving on to the final four, we'll be talking about that this week and again next week once the tournament is over as well. Thanks to Emmy for producing today's episode. Thanks to Father John Missy for the music. Thanks to you for giving us a listen. We'll be back again later this week. Have a good one.